Okay, welcome all once again. So with that, I think we can go ahead and start the deck. And so, Alan, take it away.
The deck should be started, hopefully.
Yep.
And we're going to go to the first slide. I'm going to hand it right back to Chris.
Okay, yeah. So just a reminder, Members Favorite is coming up September 8th, our September meeting. And we currently have only two presenters. You can see details about that at the OPCUG website under the upcoming meetings. And this is something new we're having this time. We're having a prize for the best presentation by a non-board member. And so this is a chance you could win a 2 terabyte external hard drive. So if you're interested, 10 to 20 minute presentation. And all you have to do is send an email into suggestionbox@opcug.ca and tell us what your topic is going to be, a title and a brief description. We'll get it up onto the website, and we'll reserve a time slot for you at the September meeting.
And as the graphic says, you've got 4 weeks to make your presentation. So
yeah,
the clock is ticking, people. Okay, moving along, a follow-up from last week. We were talking about how to find archival material on the website, and there seemed to be some discussion about how you can do that. So I'm going to give you here 3 suggestions on how you could do it, and then we'll follow up with something else. Basically, if you go to the homepage of the website, you'll find a search box, which is a customized Google search. If you pull up any page, and this is any page on the web, not just any page on OPCUG's website, and typically you can use a keystroke shortcut and call up a local search on that particular page, or you can do what I call a directed Google search, which we'll talk about shortly. So if you go to the home site and you scroll down a little bit, and right underneath the main graphic, you'll find this custom search box, and you can enter any topic in there. And if you remember, Chris several times has talked about Microsoft Power Toys series. So if we search for Power Toys and we click on Google search here, then you'll find that you'll find we get all kinds of stuff about meetings and PowerPoint presentations. And you remember Chris was keen on fancy zones, for example. So you're getting links, direct links to all those things which include the search term power toy. If I go to the index of Q&A topics, I could scroll down that page, and it's quite a long page because it's all of the topics that we've had since we started Q&A. And I can kind of screen each line by line looking for my topic of interest. But if I use Control F, it will pop up this search box. So again, I can type something in there. I can say, for example, we were talking about Audacity 2 or 3 times lately, the sound editor. So I can look for Audacity, and it pops, it says, well, we did the Tale of Two Forks at the end of July. But you also notice right here that there are several instances of Audacity on this page. So if I use these forward and backward arrows, I can actually go down the page and see what else we were talking about in terms of Audacity. Now, this is what I mean by a directed search. If you just pull up a Google search bar, so this is just going to google.com as you might do to do any search. And let's say we're interested in things that happened in OPCUG's workshops. So I can put in the term workshop, but then I'm going to get all kinds of stuff which is not of interest to me. But I can narrow my search down. I can focus it, and I can tell Google, I only want you to look for this term on the OPCUG website, opcug.ca. And you can use that technique for any website that you're interested in. Google will now only search on this website for the term that you've asked for. So if we do that, then you find that we had a fall workshop, a beginner's workshop, a mini workshop, and they're all linking back to our history page where all these things were posted. And our hardworking webmaster, Bridget Lord, took this position to heart and has created an easier way to find some of the historical records on the website. If you scroll down to the bottom of the homepage and you find the page footer here, you'll now find that you have this brand new link, which is called Site Map. And that, as it suggests, gives you an overview of the pages on the OPCUD website. If you click on that, you will find all these various links. So links to meetings, past meetings, links to recent newsletters, past newsletters broken out by year, the software reviews, recent and past ones, and archive, the old, really old ones. And then the links to the Q&A pages, the past topics, and the various recordings, and then the old Q&A topics from way back when we used to have them just at the end of the meeting. So there's a whole raft of different ways that you can find information very easily, I'd suggest, on the OPCUG website. So I'll let you all play with those things. Those are interesting to try out. Now it's time to go to a couple of shares, and we're going back to Chris.
Yeah, so this is one that I happened to come across that I thought was a little bit cool on its own, but I have an ulterior motive with this share, and that I'm going to make some recommendations on handling of passwords. But if you think about it, most sites that you use that require a login, they allow some kind of password reset. So if you forget your password, there's usually two methods that can be done. So either they will prompt you for a security question that you've pre-answered before, and if the answer matches what they have a record of, they will allow you to reset your password, or they will send a reset link to the email address of record. So typically what you have to do is put in your email address. They'll send you a link that will allow you to click on it, and then it'll take you back to the site where you can do a reset. The assumption being that you have control over your email address, so if somebody tries to do a password reset on your email address, you get this email. If it wasn't you that asked for that, you just let it expire and your password doesn't get changed. So what you have to think about is, what if your email has been hacked? So somebody else has access to your email, and what can the attacker do? Well, they could go to a site, request a password reset. They intercept the reset email that comes into your mailbox because they've hacked your email, and then they can use that link to go and reset the password at the other site and do other things. They could change the email address that's associated with that account, or they could look up credit card information that you happen to have on account if it happens to be a shopping site or something like that. So next slide. And so just recently, I was at Monotype, looking at some fonts, and I forgot my password, or my password didn't work. So I did the password reset, and in this case, they do it through an email. And it was kind of cool, because the email came in and said, as a precaution, any credit cards saved in your account have been deleted. So if it was somebody that hacked my account, my mailbox or something like that, and they did a password reset, at least they didn't get my credit card information, because that was removed from the account. It's no big hardship for me at Monotype to go in, and the next time I put in an order, I just have to enter my credit card information again. Now, it's not a panacea. It's not going to, you know, solve all your problems. And in actual fact, if your email account has been hacked and somebody is intercepting these password reset emails, you've got bigger problems. But why not do that? I mean, kudos to Monotype that they thought that this was something that was worth doing to help protect their customers. So some password reset advice. If the site that you're using has security questions, so they ask you things like, what's your favorite food? What's your mother's maiden name? What was your childhood pet? name or things like that. So if they do that, think about the fact that if people are researching you, they may be able to find out what is your mother's maiden name, or they might be able to find out what your pet's name was when you were growing up, or what city you were married in, or whatever the security questions are. So you're better off to use nonsense answers and then record your answers in your password manager. And we all are using password managers, right? And so for an example, you might have a question, what's your favorite food? And you put in run, something like that. Nobody's going to guess that. Okay. Nobody's going to research and find out that your favorite food is run. And so you put it in your password manager. So if you ever need it, because you're not going to remember that you use favorite food run. So you put it in your password manager. It's not a big deal if it's a little bit of extra work to go get it. How often are you going to need to do a password reset? It's not a common occurrence. And so you can look it up if you need it. The other way that you can do it is to salt the correct answer. So salting is a thing with passwords that, passwords where they get random information sort of put in with the correct answer to obfuscate it more. And so what you can do is you decide that you always use the same word or something like that in addition to the correct answer. So for example, if your favorite food was actually pizza, you might decide that your salting word that you're going to add to every one of these questions on every site might be, floor. And so rather than favorite food being pizza, it'd be floor pizza. And if where you were married is Ottawa, it would be floor Ottawa. And so you always use that same word. It's easy to remember what the right answer is, so you don't have to look it up anywhere. And nobody's going to be able to research it if you keep that word secret. So I also recommend that you do put it into your password manager anyways, but you're not likely to have to go to your password manager to get it. If you have a password reset that happens through a reset email, make sure you really protect that email account with strong authentication. You know, preferably sometime two-factor authentication, either an SMS message or an authenticator app on your phone or something else, so that it makes it much, much more difficult for an attacker to compromise your email and then be able to do those password resets. So that's my advice on passwords for tonight.
Okay, thanks, Chris. And now we have a question that came in earlier this week. And the question is about removing duplicate folders in the Outlook 2013 email client. And so the Outlook is from Office Professional 2013. And in the inbox, there are several duplicate folders. And the user here can delete the contents of the folders so he can get rid of the emails inside of the folders themselves, but he's unable to delete the folders. And the example is basically here, where you see we have a folder called Airlines with a whole bunch of subfolders, and we have a duplicate, more or less a duplicate anyway, called Airlines 2, which has some of the same folders. I mean, I noticed, for example, that the duplicate, if it is a duplicate, has an e-zine and a web server subfolder which don't appear in the original set of folders. So personally, I'm not quite sure what's going on. But let's say this was a complete duplicate of Airlines. So he right-clicks on the duplicate folder, deletes it, and it pops up this message. You want to send it to the deleted folder? Yes, I do. And sure enough, the duplicate disappears. And then a few seconds later, it's back in the original location. So I posted this scenario on the user forum, wondering if I don't use Outlook, and Chris, I don't think, uses Outlook. So I wondered whether anybody had run into this problem in the user group. And I got an answer back from Andrew, and he uses Outlook, but he doesn't have this problem. He's able to delete folders, no problem. But he did point to this website, which has a whole raft of so-called solutions for the problem. And one of them is a bit odd. The way to fix Outlook is to use a different client. I mean, I guess that will work for sure, but doesn't necessarily do it. And then the other one I find a bit odd is, right here, number four is remove the IMAP email account from Outlook. And then number five is unsubscribe from the IMAP folder as well. It strikes me those are slightly out of order. If you get rid of the account, I can't see how you can have IMAP folders. And then there's all kinds of other things like trying your browser and deleting the folder from the web version. So there's a whole raft of possible solutions here, and which suggests that there's no one solution that fits all. And sure enough, so if anybody has the answer, put the answer in the chat window and we'll discuss it later on. But if you go to a Google search and you ask the question, again, you'll find there's all kinds of different ways of doing it. A lot of them are repetitive, like using webmail. But this one suggests unsubscribing from a folder and trying to open Outlook in safe mode and then deleting the folder there. This link down here suggests hard deleting the emails, all the folders, and emptying the deleted items folder and scanning the PST file. And the next one suggests the same, essentially the same thing, and update the folder list and create a new profile and reconfigure the email account. So, you know, a lot of different suggestions, a lot of similar suggestions. And I don't know if our user has tried any or all of these, but clearly there's no definitive solution. My solution personally, if this was my problem, I'd try some of these things, but if all else fails, then I really would go back to step one. And personally, I'd use a different email client.
But then actually, what I would personally do is collapse the folder structure that you're trying to get rid of. Just collapse it and leave it there, and who cares?
Oh, okay. I guess that works too. I notice in the chat window, Timothy is suggesting something along Chris's lines. Rename the second instance to a different folder name. Somebody here is suggesting that's Tom. Tom's suggesting renaming it to ZZZZ. Now, does that mean if you rename it, then you should be able to delete it?
No, I think the point is that it sorts alphabetically, so it'll be down at the bottom out of the way.
Oh, and then it's your solution, just ignore it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. Well, there's some things to think about anyway. I don't know whether any of those will work or not. All right, moving along. We have a couple of shares from Stuart this time. And the first one is about the Internet of Things. So Stuart's going to unmute his mic and talk about this. Have you, Stuart? Yes, you.
Ah, there. It works. Internet of Secure Things. I was reading an article somewhere about something, and the thing I was reading about, which I can't remember now, was recommended as being approved by the IOXT Alliance. So, you know, I did a search. What's this group? And apparently it's a rather large collection of big companies, maybe a few small ones too, I don't know. But it's all about establishing standards for this Internet of Things that everyone has been wondering how to manage. They have a website, and I just very quickly scanned it, but I think there's a list of products that they have approved on it as well. And there are a whole raft of things that I haven't got a clue what they are, but there's a bunch of VPN services. There are quite a few smartphones, mostly Nokia and Motorola, and air conditioners. The Internet of Things.
Yeah.
You know, it's only going to grow. And it's going to outnumber humans pretty quickly if it doesn't already. So this is all about managing this and establishing standards for whether or not you can trust these things on your internet. And I suggest if people are into things on their internet that are working away in the background, bookmark this site and keep an eye on what is recommended as approved or not, because
it's a big deal.
We're not hearing much about it in Canada yet, but you know, when I switched to Virgin, the installation guy came in and he was yapping away about people with things on their internet at home and dozens of devices.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking the only thing on my internet that I don't, I mean, I have a Chromecast with Google TV that sometimes does things by itself, but that's about it. But there are smart fridges, smart appliances, I said air conditioners. Oh, God, it's hot. I'm tired. There's so many things that could be encapsulated in this. And it looks like this group is just getting started because they only have 4 or 5 pages of things that are approved. Keep an eye on this, folks.
That's good. Okay. Thanks, Stuart.
Thanks, Stuart. And you're still up. You have a way to save us all some money, I think, or make us some money.
Yeah, I recommended this app for Android last December, I believe. And what it is just an application that Google drops on your phone. Well, you drop it on your phone and or device, whatever. And randomly, Google will ask you stupid things like, are you retired? Were you in this store recently? What is your level of education? I don't know, various innocuous things. And you usually get 10 cents, 25 cents, 33 cents. I don't know, random amounts kicked back to your account that are only good on the Google Play Store, which has a lot of stuff. I'll give it that.
Yeah.
But in the time, which is, 6-7 months that I've been doing it, at the moment, I've still got about $13 and odd cents in credit, but I've purchased the professional version of a few apps, which, there are so many features in some of these things that I haven't got a clue what they do, but the best part of the professional version is it gets rid of the ads. Cuts down on the pop-ups, and it gives you more features that you may or may not want. But and I would recommend it for things like productivity apps. For example, I bought, I don't know how to pronounce it, Andre Open Office, which is a porting of Open Office to Android. And it's a full-featured suite like Microsoft Office. But it was for OpenOffice, but it works with LibreOffice, which is what I use at home on my Windows stuff. And it works really well. And it'll reach out and it'll scour my network now too. It'll look for my NAS. It'll look for all the all kinds of cloud services that I may or may not subscribe to. Has no more ads. And it's a productivity tool, which is not going to be buggered up too much by Android system upgrades. If you buy things like system analyzers, enhancers, and helpful tools, file explorers and what have you, well, they may or may not work with the next version of Android that comes out. Because I think Alan mentioned that, Norton Clean Android 11 threw a real wrench into that sucker.
Yeah.
It still works, but not as well. But anyway, productivity apps, things like I purchased OneTracker, which is a package tracking application when you order stuff online and you're wondering where it is. I used the free version for a while, and it was pretty cool and had ads. It doesn't anymore. And I can use the desktop version of it, too, since I purchased it. Not terribly expensive, but you know what? It was all free money from the survey app. So yeah, I'm going to
Being able to drop the ads is actually a really good thing, because I have some free apps on Android where the ads are actually very minimal, just a little bar along the bottom of the page. You don't really notice it. But then I have other ones where every now and again it'll pop up a full page and play a video for 5 seconds that I can't get rid of.
Exactly.
That's really bad.
Yeah.
Two things about rewards. First, you don't have to answer truthfully, so don't worry about that.
Last very long if you keep doing that.
I don't know. As long as you're consistent, because they do keep asking the same questions over and over again. Secondly, the rewards expire after a year, so be sure to use them up. And supposedly there's supposed to be a warning at the top as to when your next reward expire, but that doesn't always show.
There is a notification as to when your oldest rewards are going to run out.
Sometimes.
But the point is, it's free money to begin with that can only be used on the Play Store. And if it runs out, well, obviously there's nothing you care about anyway.
There's a chat window, Stuart, from Natalie. She says, are the survey questions mostly personal? In other words, are there any privacy issues?
You don't have to answer them if you're not comfortable.
They are personal, but being your marital status, your age, your income are the main ones that seem to come.
So that is the definition of a survey, isn't it?
No, you could survey people on many, many, many other issues.
I think Google has got its fingers into us in many, many other ways as well already. Anyhow, if you wish to indulge in the survey app, it's all up to you, and you don't have to answer any questions. And if you do, they will give you something that you can use on their Play Store that will get rid of some of those annoying commercials. Totally up to you, folks. Your call.
Thanks, sir.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and Lawrence has obviously played this game. He's suggesting you can create your own fictional tale, as long as you don't claim to be James Bond. There you go. Okay, moving along then. We have another share, and this time it's from Chris.
Yeah, so I came across this just the other day, actually. And I must admit, I'm a little chagrined to admit that I've had Rogers Ignite for close to a year now. And this was the first time I decided I should check for an update to the firmware. And so I decided I went on to the configuration screens and I looked and I could find nowhere on there that would tell me what the firmware version was, how to check for an update to the firmware, and how to apply the firmware. So nothing. So I called Rogers and at first the guy treated me as if I was an idiot that it was nice enough, but I didn't know what I was talking about at all. And he started off telling me how to, load up my browser and go to 10.0.0.1. And I said, I'm already logged in, and all the rest of it. So he finally clued into the fact that I did know what I was asking about. And he said, go to this configuration screen. And I said, yeah, and it's not there either. And he said, oh, yeah. And so he had to actually go and check with somebody else. And he came back and he said that the modem is actually a Comcast device, and it's an XP6, which is what Rogers terms their Gen 1 devices, and it looks like the box that you see on the screen. So anybody who's on Rogers Ignite, you probably have a box that looks like that. He said that updates get pushed from Comcast, not Rogers. They say Rogers doesn't do any updates at all, and it's all Comcast. I don't believe that Comcast is actually pushing updates. I think that the devices themselves are set to pull updates from Comcast. And the last update apparently was on May 16th, 2021. Rogers is currently moving to Comcast XV7, or what Rogers is going to call their Gen 2 modems. And they said that mostly it's to handle faster speeds. He mentioned speeds up to 1.5 gigabit per second will be available on the Gen 2 or the XV7 modems. And they actually do expect there will be more frequent firmware updates when you get onto XV7. So I said, well, how do I get one? And he says, well, the guys on the Rogers trucks, they have them in the van. And if somebody has a Gen 1 that fails, they'll take the opportunity to upgrade them to an XV7. But right now they have no means other than if you break yours and call them, I guess. To get the newer XV7 modems. So there's no process that they have where you can call and say, you know, I want the upgrade. It will be there, probably in about 3 or 4 months, that anybody who's got a Rogers Ignite, you could in 3 or 4 months call them up and ask them if you can get the free upgrade to the XV7 modem. And it will still not be user upgradable firmware, but according to the guy I talked to, they will have more frequent firmware updates when it comes to the XV7s. So anybody who's on it, just a little bit of advice that might help you.
Okay, thanks, Chris. And the next one is yours too.
Yeah, this I came across, and this was, I came across this today, actually. And everybody who knows me from my presentation that I gave in May, I am a typomaniac. Which you'll see in the box at the top. It says typomania is a sickness that's incurable, but it's not lethal. And I fit that to a T. And I happen to get an email from Monotype every day, and it has various fonts that are available, new ones, updated ones, ones that are on sale, and things like that. Their site, their MyFont site, has a lot of very high-quality commercial fonts. Some of them are quite inexpensive, $5 to $10. Some of them are very expensive, into the hundreds of dollars for a single typeface. Occasionally, they do have free fonts. So often what it'll be is there'll be a family of fonts, and they might give the regular or the bold or something like that away for free. And if you want the other ones, you have to pay for them. There is a fantastic deal on right now. I don't know how long it'll last. It's a typeface that came out last December, Brahma. And it's a geometric, which means that it's very rounded O's, very square, rounded shapes, very geometric, sans serif. And it includes a lot of features in it. So there's tabular and proportional figures, ligatures. There are about a dozen stylistic alternatives that you can choose. It has two true superscripts, true fractions. There are over 550 glyphs in each file, and they can be embedded in a document, which is kind of nice. So you can embed it and then pass that document to other people, and they will be able to see the document with full fidelity of that particular font. They have the entire family, 9 font widths available for free right now. Normally, and if you go on the site and you want one of the weights, it'll actually cost you $17. The complete family normally costs $87. You can get them now for free. And in the top right-hand corner, I have them showing the Brahma Thin through Brahma Black. And so anybody who is doing typography where you want to be able to have a little bit of differences between, say, headings and body text or things like that, and you don't want just the hammer approach of just saying regular or bold, here you have 9 different weights that you could actually choose from. Again, free of charge right now. So anybody who likes to play with fonts, I highly recommend that you check that out at the MyFonts website.
Okay, thanks, Chris. $87 worth. Okay. I also have a thing I found today. And it's basically because my wife decided, since Quebec is getting a vaccine passport, then she wanted to have her proof of vaccination on her phone. And interestingly, I said no problem, but interestingly, it's actually quite difficult to get a shortcut to a file on an Android screen. But of course, Dr. Google knows how to do that, so if you check on the search engine, you'll find a whole bunch of ways to do it, one of which is to use an application called File Widget. And there are several file widgets, but I chose this one by a guy called Gary Mack, I believe, which was free and basically installs. And what it does is it goes into the widget drawer, which if you're an Android freak, you'll find that you can pull up that thing and there are various widgets inside that that you can use. And you may remember that I use this when I use the Awesome Icons app to change the icon for a given application on my phone. Anyway, we'll see how it works in just a second. In fact, right now. So basically, to find the widgets drawer, you basically go to any blank area on the screen and just hold your finger on the screen, which they call a long press. And when you do that, it pops up this menu, and one of the options is to go look at the widgets. So we can click on widgets, and then we can scroll down here until we find the file widget which we've installed. We can basically select this file widget, and it will come up as this text box. And if we hit get started, then it will ask us some things like, you know, do you give it permission to access your files and folders? Yes, I do, because I want you to do that. And I want you to display a file. And do you want to do this and do you want to do that? And eventually, you'll get to basically browse for the file that you're interested in. So now you're in the file widget, file manager section, and so you can wander through your various drives and things until you find a whole bunch of things, and lo and behold, here is the current issue of the OPCUG newsletter. So if we click on that, then we can select that file, and now we go down to the bottom here and we say browse this file in the widget. And what that does is it changes our bland text box into a representation of the file. So now if I click on this, this is now a shortcut, just like these are all shortcuts. If I click on this shortcut, it will actually open the file. However, two things. It's a huge shortcut compared to all these other little ones. But if you click on it, it will actually bring up buttons on the sides. You can make it shorter and make it less wide, so you can actually resize the widget to certain proportion that it lets you to. The other thing I should note is that this icon right here for file widget doesn't bring this thing up. It actually just gives you the settings for the file widget application. And then over here, you'll remember this is the Awesome Icons widget that I used previously to change the icon. Anyway, so we've used File Widget, we've opened the widget drawer, we've created this, we've browsed for the file that we want to link to essentially as a shortcut. If we now click on this shortcut, then the PDF file opens up in a PDF viewer, and I happen to use New PDF. And so you can see now I can click on the page here and go through to page 2 and 3 or backwards or whatever. So that's a really neat little utility if you need to link to a specific file or actually to a specific folder. File widget. Quite useful. Okay, so that is the end of the prepared deck. So now it's time for you to ask your questions.
We could start off with John. John, you had a question. What was it?
Yeah, Chris. It was about Twitter. For a couple of weeks now, it suddenly stopped letting me get to the second screen when you click on a Twitter on my Android phone. I got a Moto G5. But just after we talked a little earlier today, I downloaded it again from the Play Store, and it said there's an update, and it updated it, and guess what? It worked again.
So oh, great.
I think they realized that they had done something with their software, and people were complaining because it now works fine. Just like
oh,
it used
good.
To.
So if anybody else is having a similar problem, check for updates.
Yeah.
We fixed that one real quick.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks. Thanks, John.
So any other questions or things people want to share?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I suppose everyone got the cumulative update. It is Wednesday, so I guess it was yesterday. What's with this cool new bar of items across the top of the settings menu in Windows 10?
I haven't rebooted since it got applied yet, so I don't know.
Okay. I guess I can't ask you to do it now.
Well, I can do it on my laptop, actually. It's behind me. So oh, I could see if I can get
mine,
the update
but
done
I
there.
Guess mine's not got the update or something, because that looks bog standard.
Well, the usual, when you load system settings, the usual things are all there, but there's a sort of like a...
Can you give us a screen?
A headliner with a thing saying, here's your account, sign in. I'm already signed in, so I don't know why I need to do that.
Well,
and
it
seems to vary.
Is it this update here, Stuart?
No, just
that's the preview. I would do a check for updates. Check today though.
Just the settings, not updates.
No, but he doesn't have the update, obviously.
But,
so
this is actually a version of the control panel rather than settings. You type in settings and you get the control panel, and then at the top it says local account sign in, but it also says OneDrive, Windows Update, rewards. Maybe you can get.
Yeah.
And web browsing, restore recommended for me, apparently.
Yeah, Tom's got the screen, but, I mean, it seems to vary. I have two Windows machines, and I have different things. My wife's got a Windows machine with different things across the top.
I'm missing something here, because if I go to the start menu and hit the gear icon, which is settings.
Right.
Is that what we're talking about?
Yep.
Right. Well, this is what I get. I don't get
anything. You're missing out, Alan. I don't know what you did.
Alan, go to your go into settings and go check your history on updates and see if you got the update that came out today. So yeah, if you go to Windows Update and then go down to View Update History.
No, they're here now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So
I haven't done that. Okay, so I haven't done that.
So you will end up getting this at some point. So
I'm not going to do it right now.
Yeah, but Stuart, do you have a screenshot that you could share?
No, not at the moment.
Or do you want? Okay, yeah.
I can share a screenshot if you like.
Oh,
sure.
There you go.
Okay, let me just set Tom. I'll make you a co-host.
Tom has it.
If I try and do anything but Zoom at one time with this computer, it'll blow up.
Okay, Tom, you should be able to share your screen now.
Okay, and yes. And I want this one.
Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, that's it. That's what we got here.
That's after today's update.
Yesterday's.
Yesterday's update.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yesterday's, yeah.
So I seldom sign on to a Microsoft account, only on my tablets.
And you got that from settings.
You don't use OneDrive.
Yep, you can get it to it in settings, and you get there, and you type in.
Well, from a professional IT perspective, that's one less thing I want my users to be looking at.
Oh, my God, yes.
This is also the same as the – well, let's see what happens to Control Panel. Control Panel, you get this.
Control Panel.
Hey, the good news is Allison says that she doesn't know what it is, but apparently she has 186 reward points.
Yeah, my wife has points too. She doesn't know why.
Or what you can get with the rewards.
I don't know what I can use them for, yeah.
That's bizarre.
Maybe good on the Google Play Store.
You buy a Surface with that, can't you?
I doubt you'd be able to use it in the Google Play Store.
Wishful thinking, man.
Tom, he has recommended him to reboot his browser. Or
restore the browser. Yeah, it keeps telling me to restore the browser, which I haven't tried.
Or the browser. Why?
Very strange. I haven't read anything online of people complaining about this either, which really surprises me.
Yeah, I got it yesterday afternoon, and I haven't seen a peep anywhere on the net.
It's early days as far as the patching cycle is concerned.
Well, usually it doesn't take long for people to complain about things like this. Holy cow.
I need to.
This is so intrusive. My God.
I seldom use Edge, so that's probably why.
Restore recommended.
Use Microsoft recommended browser settings.
Which I'm sure will be setting your default browser to Edge.
Yeah, it wanted to try and do that. That's right. I did try looking at that.
And your search to
fast.
Bing, of course.
There's a whole bunch of things that they're not much use there. The Microsoft account, OneDrive, rewards, and reset Edge. None of those would do anything for me anyway. And I already have an icon to get me to Windows Update, so I'm not impressed.
No, I'm hoping that can be turned off.
I'm perplexed is my word.
Yeah.
I have another word, but it's not family friendly.
Well, stay tuned, folks. I'm sure more will come when we get to that one.
Yeah, maybe we'll have something next week that we can do a Q&A on this and see if how to disable it or what it's actually doing.
I mean, from a show of hands, who likes the new weather icon that came out 2 months ago?
The weather icon?
I don't know anything about it.
Well, news and alerts or whatever.
Yeah.
I find it a little bit annoying that if my mouse happens to go down there, it pops up. But I mean, I do like having the current temperature at a glance. It's not bad for that. If I could just limit it to just on the taskbar to just show the current temperature, that'd be fine. I don't want it popping up with all that other crap. I'm about to turn it off.
Mm.
Anybody else have an opinion on it?
Never mind how much valuable space it's taking away from your taskbar.
Yeah, well, I'm on a 4K monitor that's 45 inches or something like that. So,
you know what? I turned mine off. I was playing golf, and it always kept popping up, and I didn't like that. So I just ignored it.
Just in the middle of a swing, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, it's true. It seems to pop up at the most inconvenient times.
If you try to use the system tray for whatever, you know, taking a look at what's printing or various other system-like offerings, it just gets in the way.
Yeah.
Microsoft knows best, right?
Well, Windows 11, they've moved it. Eh? It's now going to be like a sidebar type thing that will come in. It's supposed to be replacing what used to be widgets that was in the right-hand panel. Now apparently it's on the left-hand side, and it's going to be a generic widget type thing, but the only thing they have right now is that news and alerts or whatever.
Did they say anything about tray icons? Like, I don't know if you can see it on my screen. Probably not, but it's off to the left, and I have about, I think I counted them, 47 tray icons.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything that they're going to, so I'm just answering. install questions. I haven't heard anything about them doing away with normal system tray icons, but I mean, Windows 11 it's not fully baked yet, so Lord only knows what it'll end up as. Okay, well, it's taking forever for the update to come down to my laptop, but we've seen it courtesy of Tom anyways, so that's
it was that's a little bigger opener. Than normal.
Yeah.
Bob Harris has a comment about the weather icon. He says he needs an icon that will change the weather.
Hey.
That would be nice.
You need one of those Russian religious icons.
Make it 22 today, please.
I think that may be one of those Internet of Things that are connected to an air conditioner.
Could be.
Local weather.
Yeah, very local. Oh, dear.
So, do you have any more questions? Or any other Microsoft issues?
Yeah.
Well, one thing I could have, are people familiar with GlassWire?
Yep, I use it.
There is a neat display you can get with GlassWire that shows you your internet activity.
Yep.
And it should look like this.
Yep.
So it tells you. So this is the maximum. It keeps changing the scale, as you can see, from 1 to 3 megabytes here. Well, this is what basically Zoom is using.
Zoom's a real bandwidth killer.
The other thing and cool too is if you click on the apps towards the top left, you can actually see what individual apps are using on your internet connection as well. So yeah, Tom, if you click there. Yeah, you can see all apps or Zoom meetings, what it's doing, uploading, downloading, and things like that over whatever period of time you've got it set to. So like right now, he's got it set to 5 minutes. There's now in the last 3 hours, what protocols have been used, or you can go by app, or you can go by publisher. So it's really kind of neat to be able to suss out, where your internet connection is being used.
It really drills in.
Yep. Yeah, it's really good.
Far deeper than I have a clue what's going on.
Yeah.
What are the two colors?
Up and down?
Yeah, that's up and down. So download is the, in this case, yellow, and pink is the upload. Those are configurable on the in the menus, too, that you can actually set it to different things.
And, Alan, you ought to try it on Android, Alan. It's very cool because you can set it to check your usage up and down for all data or mobile only or Wi-Fi only and it's
100% free on Android. That's great.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And again, way more features than I know what the heck is going on. But I like the graphs and the colors and everything, you know?
And Tom, if you click on the firewall icon at the top, you can actually go in and you can block specific apps as well. If you see, like right now, there's nothing being blocked because anything that's blocked will float to the top. But by just clicking on the icon on the left, you can actually block a given app from being able to access the internet. I wouldn't advise doing Google Chrome right now or Zoom meetings. That's not a free feature.
This is the free version.
Yeah. GlassWire is really expensive because they want an annual subscription to this thing. And I forget how much it is. I think it's about $40 or something like that. But an annual $40 charge, that's a lot.
10 devices.
The 10 devices, I think, is more expensive than that. I think 10 devices is about $100.
I think it's worthwhile if you can write it off somehow, but otherwise it's
I just use it for looking at what data I've been using, what's using data. You can use it as a firewall, but I prefer Windows Firewall Control. Which,
I like the alerts.
It's not only free, but it's also good. Yeah, the alerts are nice for – this is I don't know if they alert anything else, but basically first network activity is good, especially if you have something that – is suspicious. Like this was the weather app. So that's the first time I've actually done weather.
Well, what I found was actually intriguing is the number of apps that get updated silently in the background. All of a sudden, they'll have photos first access the internet, and it's because it's a new version of the Photos app. And so you see when these new apps just get installed automatically, and all of a sudden it'll be popping up saying that it wants to access the internet for the first time. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Now, it's educational, because when you see something you've never seen before, you just go, all right, what the hell? And start looking.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So Chris naturally says, thanks for the free funk tip. Just downloaded it.
Wonderful.
Hey, somebody's being productive in the background.
So all you have to do is unzip the file into a directory, right-click on each of the files and say install or install for all users. And after that, if you had an app running like Word, you have to restart Word to refresh the font list, but then the fonts will be available to all your applications. And if you want to actually make sure that other people you say you create a document with that particular typeface, if you want to share that document with other people, you want to make sure that you embed the font in the file. Actually, Tom, if I can take over the sharing, I can share that. So let me just get a new document up. File, new, blank document. Okay, so let me actually share this. And share screen, document, share. Okay, so I'm in document one here. So if I just some text, and then let's make it big so we can see what's going on. And then let's actually change that to, what was the name of that one?
ROM. BR something.
BR, right, okay. Brahma. Okay, so let's do Brahma Medium or something like that. Now, if you were to share this document with somebody who didn't have Brahma Medium installed on their computer, they would get a font substitute happen. And you have little to no control over what font gets chosen for the substitute. So if you want to make sure that the fidelity is there when you pass it around, if you come to the file menu and you go down to Options, and then you go to save, there's a section here, embed fonts in the file. And you can, if you want, just keep the file size down to embed only the characters used in that particular document. But that means that if they try to edit the document, they add some letter that wasn't in the original, there would be a font substitute happen. So I actually usually leave that unchecked. And then if you just say okay, and you can notice here that it can be either for the current document or all new documents you can set it up for. I usually leave it just on whatever the current document is that I'm working on. And so I'll have it embedded in that. Then you share the file. When the person brings it up, they will actually see the document with the correct font there. So I find that particular font is, it's actually a very nice font. Having 9 different weights for it is nice. But it is a very clear, very readable font, useful for everything from body text to headlines, everything else in between. So, and yeah, it was worth $87 US. Or no, did they do Canadian? I think it's US. And so the entire font family available for free.
Google has a lot of fonts available for free all the time.
Yeah, they have about 1,000 different fonts that are available at fonts.google.com.
And if you want something that's really readable, check into the Lexend family of fonts, L-E-X-E-N-D. They've been studied to make them very legible to people who have problems seeing type.
Yeah, one of the things that I find really nice about going to a commercial font site like Monotype's site is that you tend to get very feature-rich typefaces. So they will have alternate versions of type. They'll have, you know, both, you know, all kinds of figures, old-style figures or lining figures. All the rest of it will be all in the file. And so they're very, very comprehensive, typically. Very, very comprehensive files that you actually get. And so I find it really, really nice for that. But, yeah, I mean, it does typically cost you some money. But if you're willing to spend a little bit of money or wait for things like this Brahmas, which is free for the whole family, you can get some very, very nice typefaces through a commercial website that you can't necessarily find easily, even in Google's fonts. A lot of them tend to be very plain. They'll have the one character set and that's it. They won't have alternate characters and, true subscripts and superscripts, old style figures, things like that.
So. Yeah, Natalie's saying that the orders for the entire font family and for five users, which is really good.
Yeah. And if you're beyond five, somebody else can download it and put it on five other computers. Fonts are not, there's no way for the owner of the font to enforce anything about fonts except the embeddability of it. I've had some commercial fonts that if you embed the fonts and you share that document, the person who opens it up gets a read-only document. And they can't even edit the existing document at all. So there can be some restrictions like that that end up in embedded into fonts, but typically you'll find that at worst there'll be warnings that you know this is actually a commercial font, and if you're using it, you should be paying for it, and that's really about it for most.
That
most
may
cases.
Be that may be a feature rather than a bug. In other words, if you choose fonts that are very hard to get. Then maybe your document will not encounter any changes without it being obvious.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, that's true.
Okay, well, that's basically our hour. So I'll just go to the next slide, which reminds you that our next Q&A will be on Wednesday, August 18th, which is next Wednesday. And as usual, if you have questions or things you want to share, and especially if you want to give a presentation at Members Night, send the information to our suggestion box, and we will take care of it from there. So thanks, everyone, for attending. And
one question. When is the first physical meeting?
We don't know yet. We have to wait for a number of things, not the least of which is when will the church allow people back in. But we will have some analysis of the survey that was out there. At the September meeting, Linda, who is gone, I think, she was on the call. She will be presenting her analysis of the survey at the September meeting.
I won't be there.
Well, you may be in spirit. They still have a Zoom session.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to give up Zoom sessions. At any rate, there will be an announcement, and there will be something in the newsletter as well.
Second question.
Nope.
Are we going to Zoom physical meeting?
I think that the intention is that everything that looks so far is that even if we have in-person meetings, they will be done over Zoom as well.
All those questions were asked in the survey, so we have the answers that were provided. We're going to look at them, and the board will take all of the above into consideration.
They're just teasing us for now.
No, we don't know, Stuart. The board
that is a reality. We don't know 100%.
We don't know.
I think all indications are pretty strong that we're not likely to be able to give up Zoom anytime soon. So, but yeah, the analysis is yet to come.
Yeah.
Okay, so thanks, everyone. Have a good night.
Thanks, folks. We'll see you next week.
Ciao for now.
Thank you. Good evening.
Thanks, Alan, for the slides. And by the way, I'm going to use Chris
suggestion. Just collapse it and
forget that.
That's the easiest way out.
And add Tom's where you rename it to ZZZ so it goes down to the bottom.
Okay. Thanks, all.
Okay. Thanks, folks.